Welcome to the Church of Mavis. We're back from our holiday vacation. We're fatter, we're sexier, and we're back. Here's Johnny. We're back from the dead after celebrating the resurrection of Christ and his birth and all that jazz. Welcome to the year of the rabbit. That's right, we're leaving the year of the tiger. We're going into the year of the rabbit. The rabbit's going to take us down the rabbit hole, like Alice in Wonderland. That's right. And then 2012 is the year of the dragon.
We all die.
Going to be swallowed by the dragon. And then 2013 is the year of the serpent. So get it? Got a lot of reptilian going on, which brings us to tonight's show. Our guest tonight is Susan Rollins, entitled... The show name is entitled Serpentine. We're going to be discussing positive reptilian alien experiences, as well as Susan and Seti, C. Seti. Am I saying that right? Seti, C. Seti? Or is it
yes,
Seti?
You are.
And we're going to get into that. But a few things first. That I want to get into. I've noticed within the UFO community that, and the conspiracy circles, that there is a growing hatred towards races from space. Most of this hatred, of course, is based on speculation, like most of ufology. For instance, you have the whole Illuminati, David Icke, whatever the heck his name is, reptilian paranoia conspiracy that there are reptilian shapeshifters controlling, you know, our government. The Queen of England, she's a big lizard, she shapeshifts. There's this inkling to be like back in the 1500s. Let's say you're a Catholic and you... or for the Pope and all that stuff back in the 1500s. And a Lutheran comes up, and well, back then, they didn't like Lutherans, so they would burn them at the stake. So in my opinion, in my perspective, I see this thing of people taking alien races that no one really knows. I mean, we know some about them, but a lot of it's speculation, a lot of it's based on experiences and gathering data, and people like to just lump this whole race into the evil category, and the same with the grays, too, on some level. You know, I just got a book from a review copy of Nigel Kerner's book, and I'm going to have him on the show. We're going to have him on the show at some point, but the name of the book is Gray Aliens, Harvesting of the Souls. It's basically like the whole book is about gray aliens harvesting our souls. And I just think there's a dangerous thing when groups of people sit back and label an entire race evil so easily.
Hey, and, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Human beings have been doing that since, you know, we started doing things. Well, we do that with everything. I mean, people, the football teams, to you know, you name it. I mean, that's just what we do. So
it's just all
out of fear. That's all it is, man. It's just fear. That's it.
I think it's if we're ever going to become a galactic civilization, if that ever happens, I'd like for it to happen, but I'll believe it when I see it. That a lot of these people, they would burn these beings like they would back in the 1500s. You know, boil them, burn them, stretch them, guillotine them. It's like the reptilians are the new Jews. It's like, and I see this a lot. Like, if you mention reptilians on Facebook, man, these Illuminati people are like, wah, rah, 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 rah. And then I've seen this one lady, I can't recall her name, but she's from Britain, and she has direct... you know, descendant of the queen, and she's like, well, you know, I've never seen anybody in my family turn into a lizard or whatever. And you can even go on YouTube and, like, you know, they have all those silly reptilian videos. If you freeze the frame on 1.30, you will see the reptilian glitch in the Matrix, and you will see this news anchor person turn into the reptile.
Yeah, I'm gonna believe stuff on YouTube, dude.
Really. It's hilarious, really. But I think, you know, all races, no matter what you think about them, are like people. You know, there's gonna be good people and there's gonna be assholes. You know, it's like the human. I mean, there's good, there's evil. So you can't just say one whole race is evil. That's ridiculous. So we're gonna get into some positive experiences with Susan, that she's gathered data from with some of her consultations. Another thing I wanted to talk about really quick is I had a UFO experience over my holiday vacation. I've had many in my lifetime. This one was kind of weird. I was feeling kind of down, had the, you know, feeling kind of icky. And sometimes I study from many different belief systems. I've read many, you know, from Buddhist to Christian to Native American to Norse to Druid to you name it. I've probably read it or looked into it. And I decided to read the Bible some. And I started reading some scripture. And I actually, when I do read some scripture, it makes me feel a little bit better. Of course, like I have one of those books where it's layered, like love, compassion, forgiveness, and then there's sections like occult, homosexuality, and like the real freaky, you know, burn people sections. I kind of skip those and stick to the positive, like, you know, I think there's some good stuff on love and forgiveness and, you know, compassion. I think the stuff with the cult and the creepy stuff, like some crooked preacher or whatever from back in the day probably slipped that in there, you know, for their own political means or whatever, their own beliefs. But
dude, you don't got to explain yourself. I mean, you know, there's good messages in there. You know, Jesus had, he spoke of people doing great things, you know, they just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, so there's nothing wrong with. Just continue with the story. You don't have to explain yourself for checking out the Bible. That's all I'm saying.
Most of the stuff with Jesus in there, I definitely agree with the positive stuff. But and basically, I got really weird, started burning incense, lighting candles, and I had these DVD Bibles. I put them on my DVD player and started playing them really loud on two TVs. And there's like little goat pictures and shivers, and they're playing real loud in the house. And suddenly, I had the inclination to go outside. So I walk out in my front yard, look up in the sky. I see in broad daylight what appears to be a white object, like a star, moving towards the sky, I mean through the sky, away from my home. No sound, no exhaust. It just looks like a star flying through the sky. And then I look to the other side, and there's another one doing the same thing. It's like they're both leaving my home. They were UFOs, unidentified flying objects. I'm not saying they're spacecraft with little whatevers in them, grays or whatever, but it was like I saw two, I kind of took it as like maybe two spirits leaving my house. Jeffrey's, you know, doing the Christ thing again. Let's go check him out. And then they left. But that was my UFO experiences, and I've never had anything happen really revolved around the Bible on a UFO level, so it was kind of weird. I was like, what? That was my UFO experience.
You know, I kind of tie all that stuff in together anyway. I lump kind of all the paranormal stuff into one big pot of soup. You know what I mean? Just kind of, because once you start separating everything and, you know, you drive yourself crazy.
Exactly.
You know?
And we've already did that. I have anyway, but hey, I come back from Wonderland now and then. But the MavisIncarnate.com website's been redone. It's looking sweet. You haven't checked it out, MavisIncarnate.com. It's looking beautiful. Looking very nice. The best ever, I think.
Looks very professional.
Yes, it's definitely, yes. It's gorgeous. And we have some new art coming to top it all off from rnabrand.com. And one more thing before we get into the guest. Tomorrow we have a special Sunday show at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's pre-recorded, and then we're going to put it on the archives as soon as we can with Bryce Zabel. He wrote the book with Richard Dolan, After Disclosure. Everybody knows Richard Dolan, of course, and basically he's the co-author of that with Richard Dolan, but he's coming to our show to talk about his TV show, Dark Skies, that came out in the 90s. We just had a contest for Dark Skies. It's pretty much ends tomorrow, but people turned in Alien Life essays to get a to win a DVD set of Dark Skies, a series. And basically, Bryce is going to stop by with us and discuss that show with us. We're going to get into After Disclosure a little bit, or a lot, and we're also going to get into his new movie he's making called Magic Men, where he tells the story of Roswell through the eyes of UFO investigators like Stanton Friedman and things of that nature. And he's, like, made all kinds of TV shows. This dude's, like, a major, you know, TV creator. So it's going to be pretty cool to sit down with him. We've also been working with Shout Factory. That's shoutfactory.com. They're re-releasing Dark Skies Declassified. They already have, I believe. It's out. And you can get, they have all kinds of cool stuff, like Mystery Science Theater and all that stuff there. And I've been talking to Tom Chin there, and he basically hooked us up with a bunch of DVD sets, and we've been giving them away in a contest, and you can find more of that stuff on the forum. But we'll be talking about that tomorrow with a special Sunday show. So anything you want to touch on, Guy, before we get into the season?
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of Bibles and stuff, you know, with all the, I'm sure somebody could whip out their Bibles and find a Bible passage or a Revelations something or other to do with, you know, all this mass die-off. Maybe some Nostradamus thing, maybe they can post it on the forum or something, because, I mean, it's everywhere, and it's all sorts of species, so kind of weird.
Talking about the birds and fish.
It's everything, yeah. Yeah, birds, oops, crabs, antelopes, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, they're like...
So, yeah. Yeah.
I saw a lot of roadkill today going to my mother's today.
Well, that
like
doesn't count. Yeah.
Like, constant roadkill, and the buzzards are like sitting around like, I'm about to eat some raccoon up in here. But,
Just like that?
Yeah, it's just like
that. Yeah.
Telepathically. You sound like Chris Rock. Chris Rock the buzzer. But what else? There's one more thing. I forgot what it was. I don't remember. I lost it. Buzzards. MUFON said it was UFOs that caused these birds to die. UFO exhaust. They released that. I saw
UFO.
It on the article on my Facebook wall, and I laughed at it.
UFO exhaust, like carbon monoxide?
Kind of UFO technology, a big ship. Apparently it's what's killing all the birds and the fish, I guess, too. I guess the USOs, I don't know. But it was like Ohio or some kind of
one
of the captain ones say. It's on my wall, but it's pretty funny. I don't agree with that. Birds are killing themselves, like the chick said in Hanson's show earlier. They're committing suicide. They don't like it here. All right. Let's get to Susan. How you doing, Susan?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be back.
You bet.
If you recall, everyone, Susan was on our special October Samhain Ritual Month show on the panel. She's back in the show entitled Serpentine. Doesn't that sound cool? Serpentine. So,
yeah,
Susan... Susan, so tell everybody exactly what it is you do.
Well, I am a professional psychic medium. I'm from the Columbus, Ohio area, and I have a full-time, sometimes overtime practice with doing my psychic readings. I also am a certified hypnosis practitioner, so I do some hypnosis in my practice also. And I've been very passionate about studying the ufology and the extraterrestrials, and I've been doing that for many, many years. So that's my thing.
So tell me about your childhood. Did you think you would be doing this when you were a kid, dealing with this?
What the way this manifested in my childhood frustration, I've always been highly intuitive. As a child, I remember seeing and interacting with spirits. And because I didn't have a family that was supportive of that and could actually direct me with that, it manifested itself in a lot of, well, I was very emotional, and I was brought up in very strict Christianity, and, I mean, we went to church every Sunday, catechism and the church choir, and I just remember as a young person feeling extremely frustrated with the Christian institutions and what I was being taught, because I knew at a young age that it was severely limiting. And I'm not trying to bash any religious institutions or anything like that. It just was my experience, and I just felt that there was so much more out there than what we were being taught. And even have memories of, you know, questioning and asking questions as a very young person in Sunday school and to my church elders, and, you know, being reprimanded for it. So, you know, I left home when I was 17 years old, and I immediately started with my metaphysical study, learning to hone in more on my intuition, spiritual teachers who could help me direct it in a way that would be beneficial to my life. And what I found with opening up intuitively and learning how to direct it, that came the interest in the extraterrestrial and UFO subject.
You know, I can totally identify with you with the religious aspect, because the same thing happened to me at a very young age, you know, and right after I got baptized, I was a baptized Mormon, and I remember doing all that and thinking just how ridiculous it was. Yeah. I don't know, it's kind of weird. It's just all this, you know, and I read it for my parents, you know.
Yep.
And, and it just, I don't know, it was so weird just sitting around in church and just going, wow, this is, what am I doing? You know, why would a God make us and then want us to worship him? You know, it didn't make any sense to me when I was little, you know.
Yeah.
Just one of those things.
That was exactly how I felt about it. I just felt like I was getting nothing from it. And what I witnessed in our congregation, the people were very frustrated. It became this big power trip, because they were donating their money to the church, and people were constantly gossiping about each other, and the congregation eventually became divided and split off, and my parents still practice Christianity and go to church every week pretty much, and every congregation that they've been involved in has had this same problem. I think my dad was telling me that the church that they're in, they're getting a division and maybe looking at another split again. And my parents are in their, you know, they're in their 60s, you know.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that just brought out a lot of frustration. And I consider myself a very spiritual person rather than a religious person. I just don't need to sit in some establishment and allow someone to spoon feed me my belief system. I've gone out and researched my own, and I do a lot of biblical research, and I heard Jeffrey earlier talking about the biblical research that he's, and this might be helpful to you, Jeffrey, if you do a lot of that. I was in an antique store. I love to do antiquing, and I was in an antique store here in Ohio, in Springfield, Ohio, and I came across an entire minister's library that was up for sale. And the guy must have passed away probably, but I found a minister's edition of a Bible. You know, the real big ones that they have up on the pulpit, you know, the real big thick
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
I found one of those for sale, like in mint condition, for like $15. I'm like, I gotta snag this. And what is so awesome about the minister's edition of the Bible is in the beginning of the Bible, they have like a 300-page index of any word, any scenario, any prophet, any person that's listed. And, you know, because to sit there and read the Bible, it's kind of hard because it's just, you know, it's not written in the language, even though it's English, it's different. But I cannot believe the things that I've been able to find in the Bible because of having this index.
Well, something like that online?
Well, you could probably, you might be able to find it online. I can email you the edition of it if you guys want to, if you're more interested in it. I can, if you, you know, just email me and I can give you the edition and the year that it was published. But yeah, you should probably be able to find something like that online. But what I found is the Bible is really an entire metaphysical text. I mean, I've found everything in there from unicorns to dragons to witches to, I mean, it's just this goes on and on. So that there might be helpful for research.
There's unicorns in the Bible?
What was that?
There's unicorns in the Bible?
Yes, there are.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, know that. I mean, it's just really hard to find. But when you start to go through the index and you find these certain words and references, and you can just go reference it immediately without having to sit there and read the entire Bible, which can take a lifetime, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, when you actually start reading a lot of that, it just kind of you just kind of start glossing it over just because the way it's written. And you just really can't, a lot of times, like, interpret what you're reading. It doesn't click.
Exactly.
So you'll just read by, you know, you'll just read by stuff if you're not looking for something, you know, specific or whatever.
With me, like I said, I can read it, and when I feel icky, and I'll feel better. But, like, the occult stuff, like, according to that, I would be burned to death. There's still stuff I don't agree with in it, but there's stuff in there. I do feel better when I read stuff that's, like, you know, positive in there. But as far as, like, the occult, you know, they would have strung me up.
But, you know, I feel better when I read, like, when I start looking into Crowley and stuff like that. I mean, or I go to, like, that occult of personality website that's got all the great esoteric stuff. I mean, that's kind of, like, lifts me up. Or I listen to something really dark like Triptychon or Celtic Frost or Gary Newman or something like that. It's a certain tonage, whether in words or in music, that you know, that'll bring me out of depressions and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, that just recently happened to me at a Black Label Society concert.
Back Wild.
Oh man.
Yeah, man.
Oh, God, it was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That very thing happened to me, Guy, about a month ago.
There's nothing like it. I mean, there's really nothing like it. I mean, it's your own your little spiritual experience that you have. You know, you get that, you get the goosebumps, and all of a sudden, it's just like the curtains open up. And, you know, no drug does that.
Yeah,
but I know.
It affected me so deeply, I traded in my Volkswagen Beetle for a Dodge Challenger. I did.
There you go.
Race it all over the planet. But, yeah, so, you know, I don't know if the Bible information will help you, but I thought I'd throw that out there at you.
Well, let's, one thing I want to say, and I know you have patients, clients, and you give consultations, but you also do hypnosis as well, right?
Yes, I do.
And let me say this real quick about lately in the UFO field, since the whole Emma Woods thing, which is one case involving David Jacobs and involving certain people at Fruitopia that I don't like or we don't like, they, you know, this one case supposedly of Jacobs and Emma Woods, you know, apparently there was some mistreatment while she was hypnotized and just, you know, the weirdness. So now, like a lot of people that are, you know, kind of circle jerk Fruitopia, if you mention, you know, hypnosis, oh, it's bad. And that, to me, that's wrong to let that one case that showed some abuse to, you know, shadow the whole field of hypnosis. And that's going on, too, right now in ufology on many levels. So I just wanted to put that little disclaimer in there that, yes, that was a bad case, but to, you know, try to label the whole thing like that just because of, you know, Fruitopia is pretty ridiculous. So tell us about these people. They just come to you, and do they know you deal with, like, alien stuff, or is it just, like, come up?
Well, you know, the way I've done readings professionally since 1999, the psychic readings, and I, you know, I've been researching in the UFO and the extraterrestrial reality, you know, for many years. And what I started doing was I started many years ago, I had to start speaking publicly about it because I do a lot of conventions where I go and do psychic readings all weekend. And some of these conventions are really big. I mean, you know, we get sometimes thousands of people coming through the door. And so I started feeling an urge to take my information about the UFO and extraterrestrial reality on a more public scale. And so I started speaking publicly about this stuff, oh my gosh, geez, it's been years, really, since I've been doing this. And at first when I started getting up and speaking publicly about this, I wasn't sure how it was going to be received. I didn't know if I was going to be laughed off of the stage or, you know, but I went ahead and took my chance. I trusted my intuition about it. And what has happened has just been absolutely amazing. I mean, I have had I got like a following here in Columbus, even kind of in Ohio. I mean, I'm getting paid for my talks now, where at first I just used to volunteer for the information because I felt that it was so important for people to understand more about what was going on. And I do take a more benevolent approach about it, and I just wanted to get the word out there about it. But, you know, people seem to be embracing the message with open arms. I mean, I get people emailing me and calling me, and that's kind of how it got started. So people do know that I do the UFO and extraterrestrial research. And, you know, I've only had a few hecklers in all of the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that I've talked to about this stuff. I've only had a few people challenging me or being rude to me in all of the people that I've spoken to. So it's been really awesome. And I find that the people are hungry for the knowledge. There's just not enough people out there talking about this or educating people about this. And we're coming into crucial times about this. I mean, the UFO sightings are up like 700 to 800% globally. And you know, people, I just feel like if people don't open their minds more to this and accept this as part of our reality, you know, we're coming into crucial times in evolution, just like we were talking about earlier. And if we don't think outside of the box with this, we might miss the boat.
Definitely.
Yeah. Do you think it's just a spike in people not afraid to come forward now? Do you think more sightings? It's just more people just are more comfortable with saying, hey, I saw something, you know, instead of
I think it's really both. I mean, I think that, you know, there are sightings that are on the increase because I really kind of feel like the veil between the worlds is lifting. In my practice here, I'm seeing people that I'm seeing people growing spiritually and psychically. And this kind of recession that we've been in has really affected people in a spiritual way. I mean, I know some people, it makes them crazy and they get all, you know, postal or whatever they're doing. But I've seen a lot of people coming through my practice that would have laughed at even coming to talk to somebody like me a few years ago because they were so rooted in the traditional world and their conventional belief systems. And I'm seeing people coming through the doors now that are seeking their traditional sources of information are not feeding them any, and they're coming to people like us, you know, like what we're talking about on these radio shows and the more spiritual aspects of this for fulfillment. And I just, you know, as I was saying earlier, I think kind of like the veil between the worlds is lifting. And so where we were having sightings before, and, you know, sometimes people report seeing UFOs, And there could be a whole group of people standing around them, and those people don't see them. And so something seems to be happening with people being able to see these visually more. Does that make sense?
I've had that happen before. Like someone was standing right next to me, they wouldn't see it, and I'm like, don't you see it? And I saw it, and they didn't. It was kind of, I know what you're talking about with that.
Yeah, that happened to my husband and I. We both saw something that was unidentified. It was a green glowing object that just came racing through, and nobody else saw it. And both my husband and I saw it as clear as day. So I just think that something's happening where people that maybe weren't able to see these before are seeing them. People are becoming more spiritually heightened. And when that happens, people are becoming more intuitive and more psychic and more clairvoyant. And they're able to see these things with their physical eyes. And I also believe, you know, with Dr. Greer's Disclosure Project, you know, back in early 2000s, where he brought all of the the witnesses that had had experiences, very credible witnesses, I have to add, that got really got the ball rolling for people feeling more comfortable to talk about.
Well, what you're talking about seeing and not seeing, a small little story that I talked about recently, I don't know where I got this from. I think it had something to do with Magellan ships or explorers, but imagine this, you're a tribe, you know, back in the day, doing your own thing in America, and the shaman comes up to everybody and he's like, hey, there's a bunch of, you know, ships out there that are coming, and they have, you know, white people on them, and all the tribes people look out there and they don't see anything, but the shaman's like, it's there, they're coming, but all the other people are like, we don't see anything, you know, he's crazy. So next thing you know, the ships are up and all the white people are pouring out, and now they all see them. There's a story about that somewhere. It's something to do with Magellan ships. It's some kind of spiritual metaphor or something, but it's that. It's like, I guess there's an awareness or a spiritual level to where you see, and some people don't, or it's, yeah, they get jolted, and then they do when they're, like, pouncing on the shore and invading. Not saying aliens are going to do that, but hypothetically.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely something to that as well. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But more and more people seem to be having these encounters. And people that are, you know, like I said, more in the traditional belief system and, you know, coming to me and saying, hey, I'm having these experiences. And I don't know who to talk to when they're coming to me. So it's been a very welcoming energy here in Ohio with all of this. And, you know, Columbus, Ohio, believe it, a cool spiritual community. You probably wouldn't believe it. A lot of people think of Ohio maybe as a little bit backwards, but there's a really cool spiritual community here. So,
no, I drove through there once. It was pretty nice.
You know, I was going to talk about this earlier, and this goes in with some of the circuit research that I've done. But, you know, Ohio is really a very magical place. And I've lived here all my life. I was born and raised here, and I, you know, still live here. But I just, there's an entire network of Indian mounds, of sacred Indian mounds here in Ohio that are just unbelievable. Have you guys ever heard of the Great Serpent Mound? And that can kind of segue us maybe into the serpent talk.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. They're everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys ever been to the Great Serpent Mound?
No, I've never been. No. No, I haven't.
Heard of.
Well, it's one of
I've been to a lot of stuff in, like, Arizona, you know, Native American stuff in Arizona. I was surrounded by three Indian reservations, Hopi, Navajo, and Apache. So, I mean, you couldn't go anywhere out there without finding, like, old soot from fires that had, like, been lit. You know, and then when you start digging around, you can find bones and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I'd really like to check that out.
Why do they call them serpent mounds? Does anyone know why exactly serpent mounds?
Here's the thing. I've been visiting the Great Serpent Mound. I mean, it's about a two-hour drive for me, but I at least try to get up there a couple times a year because, in my opinion, it's probably one of the most holiest places in the world. The energy there is just so unbelievable. To my understanding, I think it may even be a no-fly zone because the airplanes going over, it's such a magnetic energy that it interferes with the gauges on the airplanes and they become unreliable. So I'm pretty sure it's a no-fly zone. And I've also come across information, I believe this was in Nancy Red Star's Star Ancestors 2 book, that they have picked up some type of a frequency in space that comes from the Serpent Mound. This place is absolutely amazing, and it's called the Great Serpent Mound because it's in the shape of a giant serpent, and it's obviously meant to be seen from an aerial view. You have to actually climb up on a lookout tower to actually take in the full, to be able to see the full mound because it's so massive. It's meant to be seen from an aerial. But I was up there. I was so honored. They invited me to come and speak up there over Labor Day weekend of this past year to do my extraterrestrial UFO presentation up there. And there was a guy that was on before me. His name's Russ Hamilton, and he's done extensive. He's an expert on the mounds, basically. I think he may have even written a whole book on the mounds. But I put links up on my website on the Cool Links page for all of the listeners that want to do any research about what we're talking about tonight. And there's a link for a person that's interviewing Russ Hamilton about the Great Serpent Mound. But the Great Serpent Mound is, well, it's called the Serpent Mound because it's in the shape of a serpent. But what they've come to find out, what researchers such as Russ Hamilton have come to find out, is this mound is, they believe it to be associated with Stonehenge, and it's in perfect mathematical geometrical alignment with the constellation of Draco and Ursa Minor, the Little Dipper. And so there's definitely a Draco connection there with this mound, and it's documented. You can find the research. I even put a document on my website for the listeners who want to check it out about the link to the constellation of Draco and the Little Dipper. But this mound,
what's
the
that
energy
site link so people can look now if they want? Or
it's my website. It's SusanRawlings.com. It's SusanRawlings.com, and it's on the Cool Links page, so I'll have to scroll down a little bit. But I've probably posted maybe like 15 or 20 links today for the listeners if they want to do their own research, because I encourage people to, I mean, we gather information in the UFO community, and some of it's disinformation, some of it's great information, but you almost kind of have to intuit your way through the research. You guys have probably had this too. I mean, do you find you kind of have to put your BS detector on sometimes?
Oh, yeah, it's always on. It's like continually going off. I have to turn it down just so I can do these interviews sometimes. Simmer down. Not you, though.
Okay. Well, I posted links to things that I would be referencing tonight so that the listeners can go and do their own research. And in my heart and my intuition, and I've been studying this stuff for so long, I try to get, the most credible researchers and, aligning with my own research to be able to give it out to the public. So, feel free to check it out. But, yeah, the Great Serpent Mound, I had an experience when I had done that talk up there, because I was actually there from 9:30 in the morning until, 4:30 at night. And usually when I go, I'll just go for, an hour and do a meditation and then go on about my life. But this day, because I was presenting with other groups of people up there, I was there the whole day. And it was not maybe a week later, I had the most incredible spiritual awakening, and I know it was because of the time that I spent at the Serpent Mound. I had a complete full awareness out-of-body experience that was completely disconnected from my physical body. I did not need eyes. I did not need ears to hear. I was able to travel at vast amounts of speed wherever I wanted to go. And I know it was because of the time that I spent at the mound. And another thing about this mound is that people, Mayan elders come there. Native American elders come there. Tibetan monks, they did a ceremony there where they brought these crystal skulls in, original crystal skulls, not replicas, original crystal skulls, which people believe they're really not from this earth, to activate that mound a few years back. And so it just tells me if these holy people are coming to this holy place and honoring this place and doing ceremony and ritual there, how can this connection be so evil? How can it be so bad? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, the serpent wasn't made bad until, the Christian origin story with Adam and Eve. I mean, the serpent was, if you look at if you go outside and you look at, on a clear night, and you look at the Milky Way and you can see the band, the band of stars and everything. It's like that's actually represented on Earth as a serpent. And that's the symbol of the serpent eating its tail. I mean, you see that everywhere. You see it in
most systems that mean immortality and healing.
And the serpent is actually a good thing. And it being the serpent mound, and that goes back way before Christianity. I mean, it goes. I mean, it's one of the original. You know,
my Cherokee astrological sign I found in a book is serpent. It means, I was tripping out on this book. It's Cherokee astrology, and you have to do all these calculations to figure out your little doodad. But mine was the serpent, and it said that the serpent basically is here to awaken humanity to the fact that the star people exist. And this was in this book. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm a serpent.
I believe that. I believe that because a lot of the research that I've done over the years and, you know, even putting together for the show absolutely indicates just exactly what you said. Another really cool thing that happened at the Great Serpent Mound, it was back in 2003, there was a series of crop formations that happened, I think it was within maybe a month of each other, but they happened within like a perfect triangle on the map of about 30 miles. They were all associated with these Indian burial mounds. And the one that formed right across the road from the Serpent Mound, because when you go up to the Serpent Mound, you have to, like, drive up this big hill. You know, it's kind of secluded. It's a crop formation, I believe. It was a real one that formed in the field. It was a soybean field right across from the Great Serpent Mound. And it was in the shape, there were some circles, like concentric circles, but in the middle of it was a huge eye, and the slit, the pupil of the eye was a vertical slit, indicating serpent to me, or reptilian. And, you know, it was just beautiful. I've got a picture of it on the cool links on my website if people want to go look at it. But, you know, that's some of the serpent energy even going on here right out my back door. And, you know, people come from all over the world to honor this sacred place. So I just can't imagine that all of this is bad. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, they're in Sumerian text and pictographs and stuff like that of them, you know, nursing human babies, you know, and it's...
Well, yeah. Actually, I had an experience. This is what really actually got me on the quest to know more about the positive reptilian experiences. I was doing a hypnosis session with my husband. I was doing a regression with him, and he went into a past life regression where he felt like he was in the times of Christ, and he saw himself as a shepherd, a very peaceful person, and he felt like he understood the original teachings of Christ during that time. And during that experience, during that regression, and I believe the hypnotic regressions are very real, even if other people are slamming it, in my opinion and in my practice, they are very beneficial for people. My husband had a recollection of interacting with a reptilian being during that time. It was almost like a reptilian humanoid that he felt was almost Christ-like. He felt it was benevolent. He felt it was a friend. He felt it was a teacher and a mentor. And when he came out of that experience, when you bring somebody back into their conscious awareness after they've had, you know, hypnotic regression done or hypnosis done, I went and got some of my books off the shelf. They actually were David Icke books, which, you know, I have to remember, there's so much going through my mind. But David Icke states in his book, The Big Secret, he states in there, let me find it, I actually put the quote down. He doesn't talk about the reptilian experiences being all bad at all. He talks about, let me just find this. This is a quote from his book on page 25 in The Biggest Secret. David Icke quotes, "Not all reptilians are of malevolent intent. I have no wish to demonize the entire reptilian stream," unquote. And, you know, so many people get wrapped up in the negative and the fear-mongering and the New World Order and the Illuminati that they don't pay attention to what he's saying about that. So anyways, my husband, I grabbed one of my David Icke books off the shelf that showed pictures of those Sumerian statues that guy was just talking about, the reptilian ones where they're nursing the babies. And I showed it to him, and he had never seen that. This, I do the research. He could care less about it. But I showed him a picture of those statues, and he had such an emotional reaction to the image. He almost, I mean, he was literally shaking. And I just, at that point in time, I felt like, you know, I've got to get to the bottom of this and find out what's going on and think outside of the box and, you know, rather than thinking this is all negative, because after I read David Icke's material, and I really respect David Icke as a researcher, and I believe that there may be something to some of the conclusions that he's come to, but I don't feel it's all bad. And so that's when I started really doing, hardcore getting into the research.
Yeah, he's done a lot of, back in the day, like back in the 90s, I thought he was completely, a lunatic, just weekly world news type stuff. And over the years, I've watched some of his presentations, and I've seen some of his other stuff. And he's one of the few, and I'll put in that group, that really just do a lot of research. He's a very, very, very smart man. I tend not to, when I think of, all the kooks and stuff out there, I don't put him in there anymore.
No. David, I don't know if you've ever heard him talk about this, but he said when he first started his research and started talking publicly about it, that some of the comedians, and I don't even remember where he's from, but some of the comedians in his area would literally get up on stage and just say his name, and people would just go insane with laughter. That's how badly he was being ridiculed.
Yeah, I heard a few interviews with him where he got on and he's ready to talk serious, and they'd already planned on, they weren't interested in anything he had to say. It was just, they were just going to make fun of him.
Yeah.
And he'd just be sitting there trying to talk, and then they'll start making fun of him, and he'll just be like, oh, well, it's one of these interviews. Okay. And he'll just ride with it, So I understand that, but he's, wow, a lot of these people, though, Susan, I don't understand how they sleep at night. I've said this before. They're just, so much, they just lay awake, and they're just like Illuminati, and everything's a pentagram, and aspartame and fluoride, and the birds are dying. I mean, these conspiracy people, man. I mean, they just I don't see how they get through the day. I really don't.
I absolutely agree. I mean, it's just so negative. And, I'm seeing that, I feel that we're coming to a crossroads. I'm far from it when I look around me. But I am seeing promise where people seem to be waking up on a lot of levels. And, another thing about some of the contact experience, and some of this does even go into the reptilian contacts in the research that I've done, but so much of the information is about the abductees, and I'm not trying to take away anything from someone who's had a frightening experience. I do not mean any disrespect in any way, shape, or form when I talk about this, but so much media attention or Hollywood, it's all about the abduction stuff. And when we speak to people who are considered like contactees, where they've had the positive experiences versus they felt that they were taken against their will or whatever's going on, many of these people come back and they talk about their contact experiences just being blessed with, advanced psychic abilities after their contacts, healing and creative abilities. Some people even come back, from their experiences bestowed with advanced knowledge that has to do with technology that can actually be applied in the physical world, where they had no knowledge of anything like this before. And we really need to start paying attention to these people.
Listen, I actually, back in the day when I was doing some serious occult stuff, I opened a lot of doors in my life and I never closed them,
Yeah.
And over the years, I would notice things that all of a sudden that, I'm into, your brain just, it's almost like it has to rewire it to just to deal with what it's dealing with, or to deal with the energy that it's dealing with. And I think it can do that. And some people just snap,
Oh, yeah.
They just go crazy. I kind of went half and half, I plan on getting into that later. At some point on the show, I wanted to do it this show, but just didn't work out that way. But I understand where you're coming from. People just your mind changes, and it's not necessarily oh, I've had an experience and I've learned from it, or I've gained knowledge. It's your brain is physically different now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I can vouch for that. My husband and I, when we actually took our CSETI training, which is the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, we took that back in 2006 with Dr. Greer. And Dr. Greer was the one that I talked about earlier with the Disclosure Project for the listeners who aren't familiar with that. But we were up at Dr. Greer's house, and we were in Virginia, and we were somewhere up around in the Blue Ridge Mountain area, but there was a group of, gosh, I'm going to say maybe 30 of us up there at Dr. Greer's house. We were up there for a week, and Dr. Greer taught us, you know, how to, we were spending so much time in meditation, probably sometimes like up to 3 hours a day, and he was teaching us how to facilitate this contact and, you know, through means of intent and telepathy and things like that, and we had some amazing experiences out there. I was so humbled. That, and my husband felt the same way. That was the most humbling experience, I think, in my life that I've ever had. And when we actually had to go back out into the real world and go back to our jobs and back to our lives after those experiences that we had out there with making contact, we literally, it took us like 2 weeks, and I don't mean that by, you know, sounding like some kind of a spiritual snob or anything. That's just what happened. I mean, it was literally
hard. It's depressing.
Oh, yeah, when you spend that time in such an enlightening state.
Because your brain and spirit have been stimulated to the point to where, you know, it doesn't want to go back. It doesn't want to go back and worry about, you know, credit cards and stuff like that. It wants to be fed, essentially, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. And that was, you know, that was definitely one of the, you know, the amazing things that happened. And we had all kinds of contacts going on out there. There were things that happened out there that my husband and I, we couldn't put words to. People, we would sit out there, we would do our meditations during the day, and we'd sit out at night from, you know, dark, you know, like 9 o'clock at night till sometimes 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning and watch the skies and do the communications. And there were things that happened out there. I mean, there were things that came out of the sky and people would fall asleep because, you know, you're out in the dark and most people were on the 9-to-5 schedule where they're used to getting up at 7 in the morning and, you know, for sure not staying up till 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And people would fall asleep out there, and right before we would get contact or some huge orb, you know, brightly colored teal or amber orb would just come out of the sky and light up the whole sky. People would get telepathic messages while they were asleep to wake up and turn around and look where the activity would happen. And that happened. I mean, it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that would suck to, like, sleep through all that.
No, that happens to people out there. People that have fallen asleep, they would get the messages in their mind to wake up and, you know, look north or look behind their shoulder. And it would be right exactly in time when we would have the activity. It was absolutely amazing. And, you know, it was, I highly recommend that training to anybody. I think it's called the Ambassadors. It's called the Ambassadors of the Universe training, and it's just really amazing. And, you know, another thing about this, another aspect of the activity that we had out there while we were all there in our group, I don't think there was one person that felt that they didn't have some type of contact or experience out there. We all had our own experiences, and some of them were in different ways than other people would have theirs, but it was just really amazing, and I highly recommend anybody to take the training if you want to learn how to do it yourself. But we had some problems, and Dr. Greer told us, you know, I'm going to teach you guys these techniques, and you take them home, and you teach your friends, and you get your own groups together, because you're going to probably have a lot more activity than what we have here, which we actually had a lot. I was very impressed. But because he's watched all the time. I mean, he's watched, you know, by some of these covert organizations. And we had some interference on the human level. And there was not one person in our group that felt afraid of any of the extraterrestrial UFO or otherworldly activity. It was more on the level of the human aspect of it, because we were having helicopters coming in and flying really low and harassing people,
right,
and bothering people, and that did happen. You know, I witnessed it. We all witnessed it. And
hey,
so,
Susan,
you know, yeah.
Let's pick this up in the second hour. We got about 30 seconds before we before we had to break. That was fast.
Yeah.
I want to get, when we come back, I want to get into the fear situation with UFOs and stuff. I feel like there's some kind of weird, like, I don't know what it is, but a lot of fear out there that needs to be dispelled on some level from movies.
Yeah, that's everything too, man. You know.
Yeah, but so. I looked at the lineup for 2011 movies, and there's like 5 alien invasion movies coming out.
That's awesome.
They're all like evil aliens.
All right, man. It's 12 o'clock. I guess we'll reconvene in 10 minutes. JoJo, you want to take us away?
Everything must change. Stitch on one another for ends. Sometimes kids get murdered for ends. So before we go any further on my ends, I knew this cat named Bill. He didn't have a dollar. He was all the material. I believe scholar had a PhD, had an MBA. Now he's waiting tables cause his rent's to pay. Company's downsizing, inflation's rising. Can't find a job, he's feeling kind of stressed. Doesn't even feel the effects when he says. Forgot to count how many times he's been blessed. So he falls off track, starts smoking the crack. And once it hits his brain, starts to chain react. Sells his shirt off his back, shoes off his feet. He's losing all his teeth, now he's out in the street. And all of a sudden, it's like Jesse James trying to stick up his folding watches and chains. But he's from business school and he's nervous with the tools. So he ends up on his back in a bloody pool for the hands. Some people were robbed, they mother for the hands. Rest stitch on one another for the hands. Sometimes kids get murdered for the hands. So before we go any further, we want my hands. There's a chick named Sat, she had a nice strut. Everywhere that I went, she was up in the cut. Swinging that butt like Glacier Airhead. Only rapid men's that rock the flock, yeah. Brand name wearing, champagne waving. Shoes around the neck, lifestyle she's crazy. Ain't no saving, she's doing all spending. The landing, she'll do the bending. Straight machine bending, it's money to take. Shopping sprees, get her on her knees. You hit her with the keys of your crib, you acting funny. Come home one day, find counting out your money. Wetlands all the way to the Apollo. If you're broke, you're spitting. If you're rich, you might swallow. But some people will rob their mother. On one another, both ends. Sometimes kids get murdered, both ends. So before we go any further, both ends. Homeboys made a lot of noise, making money on the block, kids was on their job. They was tougher than leather, like Reverend Ron. DMC, they was toting guns, holding weight, going out of state, stacking mad chips and pushing fat whips. Fly jewels and clothes, and got no job, and then one disappeared, and one got robbed for the hands. Some people were robbed, they mother for the hands. murder for hands.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? And please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And remember, UFO research is not a belief system.
The Church of Mavis with hosts Jeffrey Richard and Guy Weddle. 10 p.m. Central Saturdays. Opening the gates of the underworld and calling down beams of ancient starlight. Tune in and watch for the apocalypse on the Paranormal Radio Network. Come to our forum at mavisincarnate.com.
Hi. I'm Gia Scott. I'm the host of this really cool little radio program on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some of them are authors, some of them are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.giascott.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We'll go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi. You've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
I declare this to be an unlawful assembly.
Call her name.
come back from our break. That's right, we've returned from our break. Everybody there?
I'm here.
All right, got real quiet, like you hear a needle drop and from far away. And it
because you were talking, Jeff. We were just hanging on your every word.
All right, well, we're back. And one thing I wanted to talk about, we're talking about positive reptilian experiences. And I was talking about, I looked at the movie lineup of 2011, and there's like 4 to 5 just creepy, crazy aliens coming to kill us movies coming out. Like there's one Apollo 18 movie that's basically just that whole story, creeped out, and there's that Battle Los Angeles. There's some other, I can't even remember their names, but just a lot. And it's like there is this kind of force out there that is trying to kind of manipulate or force people into taking this perspective of seeing aliens as some kind of threat. And then, of course, you have all the conspiracy people and, you know, even I believe Richard Dolan's gotten into this, you know, the false flag where they think the government's going to, like, fake an alien invasion to drive us to New World Order and things like that. And, you know, that could be a possibility. I wouldn't put it past them because I know when we were at war with, like, Cuba or whatever, they were going to send in a hologram of, like, Christ and cause riots and, like, take over. And I've also heard stories of them sending up a hologram to terrorists of, like, Allah or Muhammad or whatever those dudes are called and making them, you know, confess or whatever by using hologram technology. So, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, but there is this big thing within ufology and the conspiracy thing right now of the false flag thing where basically people think the government's going to, like, you know, fake an alien invasion and then do martial law or New World Order or whatever. And then when you
see, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is like.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, the birds dying. Oh, that's a false flag for this. You know,
yeah,
all the movies.
Yeah,
you know?
Everything.
Really, dude. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, that's all it is.
Part is the false flag.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the whole thing with the aliens and the bad aliens attacking us, that sells movie tickets, dude. Nobody wants to see good, happy angels come down and, you know, that'll sell some tickets, but people want to see explosions and monsters, and that's what I want to see.
No,
there's
guys.
One movie. Oh, sorry.
People love
this movie. Let me say this one thing. There's one movie coming out that's like E.T. by the Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. It's called Paul.
Yeah.
It's about a little bit friendly alien that farts and, like, smokes weed and stuff. So there's one comedy coming, at least.
Yes,
out of that.
Seth Rogen is Rogen's
yeah.
in the book.
Yeah, I want to see it really bad.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. What were you saying, Susan?
Oh, I was just saying that the movie E.T., that's one of my favorite all-time movies, and that was, like, more of a positive portrayal.
I know, but it was, like, 40 years ago.
Yeah, no. You're
right.
Yeah.
It's been a while, man. It's been, like, 20-something years. When did it come out? In, like, 83, 84, maybe?
It was after that because my son was born in 85, and he was pretty little when we died. So it was after 85, I know that.
Wow, I'm old.
I saw E.T. in my jammies at the drive-in when it came out.
I love it.
I used to run those projectors.
E-doll. All right, so Susan, these people come for consultations and what I see with the fear thing is maybe, you know, I'm not saying negative things don't happen, like with people, you know, someone could mug you, someone could, you know, kick your shin, someone could fender bend you in an act of road rage. Who's to say there's not a, you know, jerk-off alien out there that could do something bad to you? But when you start painting this picture that they're all like that, that's when it gets dangerous. So when your experiences as far as, can you tell us some more about some more positive ones?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even just getting into history, you know, when we go back and start sifting through some of the history about the positive reptilians. I mean, we get references, oh my gosh, it goes through the Aztec Mayan prophecy, Egypt, Native American, Mayan, Greek, Hindu, Sumerian, Tibetan, the Bible. I mean, we have these references everywhere, and not all of them are bad. There's actually a researcher that I really respect, and there's a great article that was posted on Rosemary Ellen Guiley's website, and I know you guys are getting ready a couple weeks, but I posted a link to her article where her and John Rhodes, who is another researcher. He's got the Reptoid Research Center, and he's worked with thousands, hundreds of thousands probably by now, of cases of people who have had contact experiences. And there's a great article on her website about the positive aspects of this because, you know, in the Mayan prophecy, which is coming to the end of the Mayan calendar, which I do not believe in any way, shape, or form is the end of the world. I think it might be the end of time as we know it. But the Mayans, they're prophesying that their Mayan god Quetzalcoatl, which is a feathered serpent, is going to return, and he's considered a great teacher and a being that has a wonderful love for humanity. And so we really need to think about this stuff. And another thing that's been happening, I don't know if you guys have seen the footage of this, but I posted a link. Jaime Musan, who is a reporter in Mexico, are you guys familiar with him?
Yes.
No.
Why do you say it like that, guy?
Because I used to like Jaime, and then Jaime just went somewhere. I don't know where Jaime went. But
I don't know who it is.
Some of the footage, and I'm sure Jaime's not out there, you know, photographing and filming this footage, but have you guys seen the footage over Mexico City and in Mexico of the serpent-like anomalies in the sky? Have you guys seen
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they even have those in paintings from the.
Yeah.
They show up in paintings. So that stuff's been around for a while. Yeah, yep.
Right.
That was. I challenge somebody to explain that away. I mean, really.
Yeah.
And that's something that's not. They can't say it's like a jet or something because it's been happening for thousands of years.
Exactly. And, you know, there was a person at one of my lectures that spoke up when I was showing some footage of that. And he said that there was even one of the astronauts that talked publicly about seeing those in space. I don't remember which one he said it was, but I should probably do my research on that and find out. But, you know, a lot of researchers are feeling like these serpent-like objects in the sky may have something to do with the return of Quetzalcoatl, which is a feathered serpent, indication right there, and, you know, the return of this great teacher, of this great God. So, you know, that's just something for people to think about. And if we get into this fear-mongering, like I said earlier, we could really miss the boat on this. Are you guys familiar with Jim Sparks and his story? He's a long-time abductee, contactee. Are you guys
yes.
Guy doesn't like anyone.
Oh, stop it. That's not true. No, you know what? I think Jim Sparks at the beginning had things happen to him, and then, you know, he had to fill in a lot of gaps, and then he needed to make some money, and then, you know, so I have...
here with Jim Sparks. I have his book. I enjoyed it.
Go ahead and talk about Jim Sparks. I'm just an old codger.
That's okay. You know, honestly, Guy, I kind of intuit my way through this, and you know, I'm not 100% all the time. I never quite, but I'm pretty good on my accuracy with my intuition. But there was a lot about his book and The Keepers that really resonated with me. And he talked about, you know, his experiences with some of the reptilian beings that would cloak their faces in human. They had some type of technology that they could cloak their faces so that he wouldn't be afraid. And, you know, these beings talk to him about the positive, about love, just like what Jeffrey talked about, talking about,
right.
You know, how we're destroying the planet and, you know, wanting to assist and help in that. So, you know, researcher Rebecca Hardcastle, who is involved Edgar Mitchell, former astronaut, his Quantrek organization. She's a good friend of mine. And in her book, Exoconsciousness, she talks about the positive aspects of the reptilian connections. So it's really, when we start to look into this, it's really, it's all over the place. And I just encourage listeners to check it out.
It's everywhere, this reptilian connection, from King Arthur, the Dracula son of the dragon, the Japanese dragon lords, to the Doors, Jim Morrison, I Am a Lizard King. It's all over our planet. It's right there, like, everywhere. There's definitely a reptilian influence all over the place. So, I mean, there's your proof. The proof is right before us in history.
Yes. Definitely.
So well, tell us about some of these positive experiences.
Well,
reptilian.
Well, I was just talking about the ones which you were kind of laughing about, but some of the other ones, I know, that's okay. You know, some of the other ones, getting back into John Rhodes and some of the experiences that he's worked with, he talks about people who have had reptilian experiences where they were given extensive knowledge, and some of it had to do with, like, fiber optics and light optics. People had no knowledge of it before and were actually able to apply it in real time. Some people have had reptilian experiences where they claim to have been healed. So, you know, it's not all bad. Another thing that, you know, even like with meditation and getting into the Kundalini, which is serpent, that's getting into the Vedic traditions with the serpent. But my husband and I, we took a meditation class that was taught by a Vedic guru, and this meditation technique is, in my opinion, is one of the most powerful. And I've taken TM. I've done every form of meditation you could imagine. But this meditation teaches you about the Kundalini and clearing your energy. And my husband had an experience where he knew. I mean, it only lasted for a few seconds, but he had a total awareness experience. And I saw it happen with him. I mean, his hair was standing on end on his arms and stuff. So, you know, again, this can't be negative.
Right.
So, you know, the people want to paint a picture of, you know, reptilians are coming to get our DNA and eat our babies. That's
right.
What people do. You know, let's look at the big picture. Why beings don't buy a house lawn or, you know, land in cities? It's because they'll be lynched. I mean, they couldn't even hardly, most people in our country, not most, but a big majority, couldn't even handle, you know, an African-American president. Well, what are they going to do to a lizard man when he gets off a ship? You know, burn him. Get away.
Exactly. Well, another, I just listened to an interview with William Henry. I really respect William's research, and I have his link posted on my website too. But he was on this interview. It's a great interview if the listeners want to check it out. But he was talking about his belief in the reptilians actually having that has to do with the seraphim, which is the highest order of angels. And John Rhodes and Rosemary Ellen Guiley, in that article that's posted on Rosemary's website, talk about this also. And I really believe that there's something to this. So, you know, do the research.
Definitely. Like we said, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, she just named her own show, the title of her show, which she'll be here in a few weeks, is Behind Every Wish Lurks the Djinn. And she wrote that book with Philip Agno, so I can't wait to interview her. It's going to be our first interview with her. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that'll be a great interview. Rosemary's really awesome. Not to
I've been talking to her a lot in my email lately. She's cool.
Not to dredge up old dirt, but you should ask Rosemary what she thinks of the International Metaphysical University.
Oh, God.
That's how we all met.
Yeah. I am you. Are they even around anymore?
They are around still.
I can't believe this Jeffrey Silman guy. He's like, he won't do an interview with us because of what we said about them on the air. He's like, they're like my family. I won't do an interview with you.
Did you ask him recently?
Yeah, and he won't because of the bad stuff we said about IME when they stabbed us.
Well, they started it.
Yeah. Just to let people know, the IMU thing, basically what happened with International Metaphysical University is they came to our show, and they basically said we worked out a deal to where they would give us access to their teachers if we advertised for them. And I was like, okay, you got some cool people there, we'll do it. And next thing you know, they come to me and say, a guy from Edgar Casey, I can't remember his name, he looks like Colonel Sanders' bucket of chicken, he runs the Edgar Casey Foundation. He was asked to do our show, and basically IMU came to us and go, we found out what Mavis means. It means Antichrist. We can't have anything else to do with you anymore. And they broke the deal off completely because Mavis supposedly, no one knows what Mavis means. I think it means maybe us. Some people think it means Osama. Some people think it means Obama. Some people think it means Bush. Some people think it means the Mavis submarine dude. Some people think it means, you know, all kinds of crap. Saddam. Nobody knows. Nostradamus knows, maybe. Or God. But then basically they said that it was, you know, evil, and they broke the deal. So we gave them hell. I called their answer machine and was like, Mavis, this is Mavis. I'm coming for you. We are legion, we are many. So they basically, that's that story. But, and then, oh, never mind. to the point, let me slip in one quick MyLabs question.
Sure.
Susan, with MyLabs, I've never listened to anyone about it. Like, I don't know anything about it. I don't know. I know sort of what it is, but why do this organization, why do they take people? Just if you could summarize a little bit for a beginner about MyLabs, what do they do?
Well, when we get into MyLabs, this has to do with military abduction squads, and there have been witnesses who have come forward, I think even through Dr. Greer, that have actually taken part in these military abduction squads. And a lot of times what people will experience during these abduction scenarios, well, first of all, why they're taking these people is because these are the people that are actually having the real the actual real deal contact experiences, and somehow these covert organizations are aware of who these people are and aware of their experiences. And so what they're doing is they're re-abducting these people and harassing them in a very, very negative way. I mean, some of these people that have had these MyLabs experiences talk about, I mean, really bad things. I mean, violence and, you know, scare tactics. And I heard one woman who I feel is very credible at the UFO Congress last year talking about even, you know, sexual assault upon her. And these people are being re-abducted, and they're being interrogated about their real experiences. And that's why this is happening, because these covert organizations want to know why these people are being taken. They want to know what they're being taught or given, and they want to know what it's about. And so some of these people that are, now I'm not saying all, but some of these people who are having these very negative memories of abduction experiences, a lot of times report very human-looking people in military attire. And so I have to speculate that some of these people that are having and coming forward and talking about these awful negative abduction experiences, like what we hear about, what gets a lot of attention, could possibly, and like I said, not all, but could possibly be victims of this MyLab situation and maybe not even be aware of it.
Well, I want to invite you to do another show, and I just want to talk about that, but we'll switch back to the positive situation. But let me tell this one little counter I had with something that sounds like that. when I was having mass UFO sightings at my house in Georgia, and it was basically multiple witnesses. My mother saw UFOs, everybody, my brother, friends, they were like, do you attract UFOs? There was a point where this silent helicopter came out over my home, and it looked like it didn't have any rotors or anything. It was just like a cockpit, made no noise, set over the house, and there was a man in it dressed in like an Air Force crazy Top Gun kind of uniform, and he looked at me and waved, and it shot up in the sky. And I believe during that time that my UFO sightings were so severe there that they sent out some kind of unit, and maybe it was something like that. So that's my interest in it. But I definitely want to invite you back for another show and to get into that deeper to explore that. But that's the extent of, you know, what happened to me, and that may be connected to some kind of organization like that on some level. It wouldn't surprise me.
Well, whenever I get people that come to me that talk about their abduction experiences, that's one of the first questions I ask, and it's not that I'm trying to lead them into a different direction or put a thought in there, but, you know, I do ask, and this has nothing to do with hypnosis, this is just conversation in general, you know, asking them, did they ever have any memories or experience any human-looking, you know, human dressed in military attire, because you know, this is, it's very, very prominent part of it. Just, I mean, that's dating even back to like Betty and Barney Hill, I'm thinking.
Montoto believes that was my labs on some level.
Yeah, I wonder about that also, because...
Uh-oh, don't say that in front of him. You'll make him perk the leg. Start rubbing his mustache. All right, well, let's, the positive reptilian experiences. So does anyone ever have a negative reptilian experience? Oh, I wanted to say one thing that Susan, we were talking on the break about the Jason Wilson debate where he made the mistake of saying they're all negative when that's obviously not true, that I talked to other people in ICAR and they said that there was positive experiences as well, and he kind of just messed that up, but that kind of got Susan, when she heard that debate, you know, to question that about him when he interrogated me like a heretic. But anyway, so any negative reptilian experiences that, from these people at all, ever?
Well, you know, none that I've come across, but other researchers that I very much, you know, respect their research, getting back to John Rhodes, he talks about some of the people in contact with, like I said, he's worked with thousands of people. Some of the experiences are negative. Some of them appear to be very loving, very almost like taking on a mentor type of a contact experience. And some of them even appear to just be kind of neutral. Like I've actually talked to people that have had more neutral, where they just actually felt like they were being observed. I had that happen myself, and I don't know if this will count, but I'm a very vivid dreamer, and I had a dream of these reptilians just observing me. I didn't feel afraid. They were humanoid reptilian-looking beings. But it was one of those dream experiences. I don't know if you guys have had them before, but it felt like so much more than a dream. Have you guys ever had those before?
Yeah, almost night. I wake up and go, oh, thank God.
Yeah, I just felt like I was being observed, and I don't know why they were looking at me. I don't know why they were observing me. It was there was no, you know, thought-to-thought communication going back and forth, but, you know, some of it just appears to be very neutral.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So these beings, I mean, is there any data or does anything come up about who they are, where they're from, where they're coming from? You know, what are they? Are they like, you know, there's all kinds of things about the dinosaurs. Some dinosaurs went into hiding and they evolved and they like, you know, whatever. They live on the Earth and the Hollow Earth. There's stories about... I think David Icke also worry about reptilian, you know, prisoners being cast down to the earth, which is from the Bible, Revelations, the dragons that fell from heaven and the child to be devoured by the dragon as it was born and all that stuff. There's so many different stories. Those are, of course, the darker, creepy fallen angel ones. But What about the positive ones? I mean, is there any data on, like, or any, you know, speculation on the where they come from, or what exactly, you know, what are
they? In my opinion, there are many different ways that we can view this. I believe that some of them may come from other places in the universe. I believe that some of them may be more of an interdimensional type of a being, where they have the ability to travel through dimensions and change dimensions. And I also believe that some of them are already here. When we get into the Hopi tradition, the Hopi Indians, they claim that their ancestors emerged from an underworld city after the last great purification. And they also talk about, they claim that there was a world of plenty that was maintained by what they call the ant people, which maybe we could refer to maybe as the Greys, possibly. But these ant people, they claim, were under the supervision of their elder brothers, which they call the snake people. And so there seems to be some type of possible underground network of these beings that already exist here on the earth. And, you know, it gets into, we really can't prove this, as with any ufology, but these go back into these ancient Hopi traditions, which I feel are very sacred.
Yeah, you mentioned Nancy Red Star earlier. I've been wanting those books forever, but they're expensive and I'm broke. But I know what you're talking about. They're like the stories of the Native American tribes and their stories of interacting with the star beings and all that stuff. I want to buy them one year when I have money. But I've seen them. I've stared at them many times. So I'd like to get her on the show one year. I'm actually in talks with Bear & Company, Inner Traditions. They just sent me a review copy of a book, and we were supposed to interview Nigel Kerner, which he kind of wrote a spooky book. I haven't read it yet, so I don't know if it's completely saying the Greys are spooky, but it's basically about the Greys and harvesting souls or something. But I know Nancy, her book's from them, so I'm trying to work out maybe a little deal with them with the schedule later on in the year, see what we can work out, because they have so many good topics from 2012, Nostradamus, shamanism, UFOs, all kinds of stuff, and I know she's there as well. But what's the word on these tribes? It seems like the only thing I've ever seen that's not true. I know the Nancy Red Star thing, they claim they've been talking to these beings for a long time, but another thing that I wanted to bring up is I've been reading Graham Hancock's Supernatural. It's huge, by the way. I'm threading to it. It's great. But a lot of these ayahuasca experiences and, these people that have experiences with shamans and take ayahuasca and go on, like, their little vision quest, these beings emerge and, like, you know, have some sort of contact experience while they're on this, ayahuasca, this plant, which I believe some of these plants are put here for that specific purpose, like a telephone, to talk to the divine on some level to get through the gunk, which is around us that we've been programmed with and, you know, brainwashed with it sometimes. Well, you need a little bit of drugs, like Jack says. So, like the ayahuasca experiences, Graham Hancock did ayahuasca, and he started to have, like, seeing freaking reptilians and stuff, so...
I heard Graham talk at the X conference a few years back, and he talked about those experiences, and he didn't talk about them in a negative way at all. He talked about them in a very positive, enlightening way.
Yeah, he loved it. It changed him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It had a profound impact on him.
All this ayahuasca involving these experiences are positive. I mean, I know... you feel like there's some side effects of taking it, but all the experiences involving all these shamanism books and Hank Wesselman, I think that's him, right? He had, I think, reptilian experiences and saw a tall white gray. And, these reptilians show up periodically in shamanistic teachings and... with these plants. So there's some kind of connection between them and the plants, apparently. Mm. Like it's some kind of key, maybe, to communicating with them.
Well, I don't think it's a plant. I think it just unlocks...
Yeah.
It raises barriers. You know, it's just like, kind of lets the flood, lets everything just flood in, you know.
It's like the Rastafarian say, man, with the weed, it's a telephone to God, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, I think there's kind of, I mean, I've never experienced the drug that Graham was talking about, but in my opinion, when we look at that, I think that these kind of drugs probably help people to get out of their analytical thinking mind that won't allow us to go to these places. It won't even allow us to trust our own intuition.
Right, right. And that's an important thing. I mean, that it gets rid of that, like you just said, the inhibitions. It gets rid of that, yep. So you're not dealing. Yeah, you're not dealing with those feelings anymore. They're gone.
Right.
So you can just deal with the actual experience.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm sure those kind of drugs or whatever they do to the chemistry of the brain or whatever's going on, it allows for people to get completely outside of that analytical mind that holds us back.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they don't really handle it well.
Yeah, well, are you talking about people who are doing this in the spiritual sense? Because I'm thinking with experiences like what Graham would have had, he did it in a very ceremonial kind of spiritual guided experience. But when people are just out taking these kind of drugs and just messing around and they're not doing it and honoring it in a sacred way, I could see where it could take them completely out of their element and make them crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to be, you got to be ready. This isn't like just some little sit back and, you know, trip out. I mean, it's a whole, it's quite an experience. It's a mind and body, you know. And sometimes I don't think people are ready for it. They think they are.
Well, ayahuasca, according to Graham Hancock, is the vine that allows you to see the dead. That's what he called it.
Yeah.
That's what their whole the whole tribe's spiritual belief system revolves around this plant and talking to their ancestors and stuff, and that's what happened to him. He saw, like, I think someone had passed away, maybe his dad or someone, and they were all standing around, like, all these spirits and stuff. You go to the land of the dead. Of course, there are people out there saying, oh, they're doing drugs. Yee-haw, you know, drugs. But this whole tribe is like, you know, it's their ceremony. They do it, and, you know, it's to talk to their ancestors. That's what, there are some plants, I believe, that are put here by whoever created us to do these things. They're tools. People abuse them and whatever, but they're still here.
I have a thought on that, Jeffrey, because in my practice with the readings, I do a lot of communication with loved ones who have crossed over and spirit guides and things like that, and you know, I think that a person can, if you practice enough, if you grow to a point, you can get these communications without having to use a drug. You can, because I do it. And, you know, when I first, I mean, I remember interacting with spirits when I was a child, but I shut it off for a while just because of my upbringing. But I really feel that people, if you train yourself and you have the right direction, the right person to teach you how to do this, that you can learn how to do this without drugs.
Right. Hey, Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, we talked to Serge Cahali King about that, so I believe it's there, but, you know, it's, I've done drugs before. Currently, I'm on Percocet for my hurt foot, so I've always,
I like drugs.
Well, listen, I did a drug called it's called Sacred Datra here in or Gibson weed, or I don't know, there are many names for it. Where, you know, you better not have something to do for 3 days. You better have people that are not doing things around you, you know, to make sure that you can't get you taken care of, you know, because it's like that. It's where the subconscious actually comes alive. There's no words that I can even begin to explain. It makes acid look like, you know, aspirin. I'm not kidding. I mean, I was just totally unprepared. And let me tell you something, man. It was It was pretty intense. It was something that Native Americans used to use, you know, in their ceremonies and stuff like that, along with peyote and stuff like that. It's a peyote type drug, but much more.
Like I said, with ufology and stuff, that there are people who are like scientifically and analytical data and the statistics and the paperwork and yada yada the graphs and this. I'm like, dude, do some peyote and just like lock yourself in a teepee and shut up. I mean, you know, get in touch with the spiritual. There's a spiritual side. There's a physical side. The physical side is an illusion. Like the Maya means illusion. I mean, this whole world's an illusion. The only thing that really matters is the spiritual side, because you leave, you know, your guts and your body, you know, they go to the worms, and what carries on? Your spirit. So in this world, all that, you know, scientific hard evidence people are looking for that you can touch and feel and see, you're probably not going to find it. It's because it's a spiritual thing, and it's, you know, it's you got to see it in a new light, a different way. It's a mystery. It's the great mystery. And it's there, and you'll find it. But if you're just always looking for, oh, I got to touch it, I got to feel it, you know, you're not going to, it's why it's not coming up, you know. It's why these tribes have been talking to these aliens, you know, for centuries already. It's because they know about the spiritual side. That's why they've been talking to them, you know, because they see it in a different way, a different light. Hello?
We're here. Hey, Guy, do you mind if I ask what kind of an example of some of the experiences you had while you were having that? Well, I forget what you said it was called, but can you talk about what you experienced?
It was called, we found it in a book called Chocolate to Morphine. And, you know, it was by some PhDs, and it was just a book that just everything in the nature, you know, that it was pretty well researched, you know, like with all the, you know, the ancient Indians and stuff like that and Chinese, and it just had all these different, so you wouldn't think would, you know, get you high and give you these different type of experiences. What would happen is that you could, the entire plant is good, but what I did is I took, when you lifted up the branch, there are all these little pods, and they look like a human brain, and they have these spikes on them. And when you cut it open, there's like there's four main parts, and they're like these slimy seeds, and that's what you eat. You can eat them, you can smoke it, you can, you know, dip cigarettes in it, whatever. And let me tell you something. What happens is it's basically poison. It poisons your body, and you go to sleep. You go to sleep for about 15-20 minutes, and then you wake up, and you're in this new state. You don't just like sit there and all of a sudden, wow, I'm high. You literally just, you go out, and then 10-15 minutes later, you wake up, and your entire world is completely different. I mean,
yeah,
it was pretty wild. I mean, I sat and had a conversation with a shirt, they said, for a good hour and a half.
A shirt?
Yeah, that was on a chair that I thought was a duck. And what had happened was this chair, listen to me, man, this shirt got up. And it was like laying, and it like sat up in the chair. And we started having a meaningful, you know, really deep conversation about things. And then I looked up, and my friend's face is in my, dude, who are you talking to?
Owl from South Park is stoned all the time.
No, dude, it was just, you know, he's just like, oh, my God, you know, we can't go to sleep. We're going to have to watch you. But I wasn't violent or anything. There was just everything in your environment became an experience.
Well, that's what these things are here for. Life is so boring in the material that it's like God or aliens or whatever had to put a plant here to, like, wake us up from our stupidity to give us.
I mean, I looked at it. Yeah, I looked at it like whatever I was having a conversation with was just projecting itself you know, to being that object or whatever that was.
I mean, the whole basis of shamanism is that everything has a spirit in it and a life to it, like everything.
It was,
so,
yeah,
like,
it was
not that crazy.
I remember the conversation. I remember some of these things that happened. I remember them quite clearly. And usually, you know, if I was, you know, usually when you're drinking or if you, you know, do acid, which I really didn't get into, or whatever, you know, everything was kind of hazy, you know. Not with this. This was crystal clear. And I would, you know, I talked to my mom about this stuff, and she was just like, wow, you know, that's crazy stuff, you know.
Well, that's like shamans and stuff, you know, a rock or a crystal or a plant. They like, you know, the plant gives them info about what it is, or the crystal gives you information about healing. You know, the great spirit, all that is, everything has an energy to it. So, I mean, that includes a shirt. It includes everything.
Well, no, it was just my mind was looking at whatever. My mind just latched onto something, and this object, it was a shirt, I mean, but it was talking back to me, but it wasn't the shirt that was talking back to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It was just my mind, to have the conversation, my mind had to pick something to talk to, you know, to for me to focus
something
on,
to focus on.
That's what I got out of it, and that's what I got out of it while I was – while I was having the conversation, you know, I knew that a wounded duck wasn't talking to me, you know?
That sure was God, man.
Dude.
So, one thing we forgot to talk about is Seti. Tell me about that real quick. After a drug conversation. Sorry, not a good idea.
Jeffrey, we did talk about that.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, we
that
did earlier. Like, yes, we did, briefly. But yeah, that, okay. We're down to the last few minutes. Do you want to
sing a song? No, we got like 10 minutes.
Okay, 10 minutes. This is our first show back on coming back from our holidays. We're our premiere for year two, our Ragnarok schedule. So this month we also have Micah Hanks and Nick Redfern appearing together in a show called Folk Devils. And then we have Rosemary Ellen Guiley about the DeGen. Oh, next week, John Vasquez about alien interference, Fort Benning, Georgia. So that's the rest of this month. And then we descend into hell for Heartbreakers Month. Colleen Thomas, Aaron McCollum, John Ratcliffe, Nutter Butter News, and then Cal Korf versus Guy Weddle. That's just going to be a month of just there for complete psychosis. That's the whole point of that month, to shake up everything, slap the whole system, and that's what that month's designed for. So, Susan, any closing statements about your site or what you're going to be doing in the future or what you're up to? What's going down?
Well, you know, I pretty much, you know, I stay here in Ohio. I do a lot of conferences and a lot of speaking engagements. I've got a few lined up for this year, but I'm sure there'll be a lot more to come since it's only, you know, the first couple weeks in January. But, you know, most of the time I'm here, I do most of my practice is the psychic readings. I have an international clientele with that. I've got a nice clientele here in Columbia in the Ohio area, but I also have people all over the world. And so some days I just sit in my office and do consultations over the phone or using Skype. And, you know, I feel real blessed. I love my job. I love my work. I do better at this than anything I've ever done in my life. And, you know, just continuing on with the UFO and extraterrestrial research and, you know, trying to educate the public about it.
You're a messenger awakening people, and maybe, you know, that's what I think a lot of us are, aliens. We're here to wake up humanity. We are the star people incarnated into this realm in the fleshly bodies, and we're here to wake you up. And we're doing it at a good time because it's a time of apocalypse. Many changes, many small changes, big changes, and we're going to see more and more of that as we progress into 2012 and beyond. And I believe that a lot of these beings come from elsewhere, and like Jesus Christ himself said, I am not of this world. So if he's not of this world, then he came from another world. So, I mean, we did too. And who's to say, you know, beings on another solar system and another planet, and we're like, hey, Earth is really screwed up. We're going to go there and try to help it out. Which, you know, I must have been crazy, but here I am.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, and I believe a lot of us. I think everybody in freaking paranormal and ufology, that's, you know, the case for just about everyone. Of course, some of it descends into madness and may go wrong or astray, but I think that's the story for many of us. We are the aliens. We have come. We are the invasion. We are here, and we're going to knock down the wall. We're shooting the catapults, baby. We're ready to rock and roll, and that's what we do at the Church of Mavis. We always mosh with the apocalypse, and
you know, whatever, dude. You just, you know.
He didn't tell
Ramblin' Jeffrey.
Guy didn't tell anyone he had tooth surgery. He's a trooper. He's dedicated. He has, like, serious tooth surgery, and he came on the show anyway after having, like, a gazillion teeth removed. So how's that? We're dedicated.
You know what? Listen, if you look at humans and then you look at the rest of the species on the planet, we really don't really belong here. We have, you know, like arms and legs and, you know, eyes and mouths and you can see where we used to have a tail, but we really don't have any natural defenses. So we didn't evolve to, like, you know, we need jackets and shoes and, you know, we go outside and we die. I mean, you know, if we're attacked by something, we can't defend ourselves. Give us some time, maybe we'll build a trap, you know. But, you know, I certainly believe that at some point our ancestors, you know, were messed with a little bit of fine-tuning, you know. So.
A little bit of alien DNA, if you know what I mean.
I think so.
Yeah, I do too.
I think so. I think that's, you know, where all the god myths come from, and everything comes from the sky, and, you know, just, it's really, I don't see why, you know, you have these skeptics that say, especially in archaeology and stuff like that, where they say, oh, that can't be it. But, you know, in a court of law, if you took all this data that we have on that, I mean, we totally went out. I mean, every culture on the planet has the same origin stories. You know, every single one.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, and they all, literally every single one. I mean, every single one that had a civilized situation had the same origin story. I mean, that's got to tell you something.
Absolutely, I completely agree. You
know? There's one source, and then all those stories are ways to interact with that source, and. Like the Egyptians and Jesus, they have Horus, and I mean, they're all similar. The flood and Samaria have their Noah. I mean, they're all like the same dude almost, or like different cultures.
All the South American and Native American. I mean, they all had it, and this, we're talking like pre-Inca, pre-Mayan. They all had those same type of stories. In India, my God, you know, India, all those Asian countries, they all had it. I mean, you can only do cross, like, cultural pollution. That only works for on so many examples. I mean, it can't work for the whole world. You know, it can't work with, the Russians, their culture polluting India or polluting Greece or polluting Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work. Well, I can see going across a couple countries or whatever, but I don't know.
Well, you know, things were very earthly people here until, you know, look at the white race altogether. I mean, the blood of Tiamat, the white race, were like, compared to most, you know, a lot of races who are like the natives and stuff, were like the white demon, the devil. We came from space. We came from Lucifer's loins.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, dude.
So what's the, you got, drop your link, Susan?
Yep, my website link is www.susanrawlings.com. It's SanRawlings.com.
Yes, and go to the cool links because she has a lot of stuff that we talked about. She has links to the different material there. So she did a good job on that. Thank you, Susan. We love you.
Thanks for having me. Great talking to you guys again.
Pleasure.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Are we ending? Is it over? Is it
yes.
over, baby?
It's the end of it.
AbelsonCarney.com. Check out our new layout.
I'm not the one who's so far away when I feel the snake bite and tear my veins. Never did I wanna be here again, and I don't remember why I came.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? And please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And remember, UFO research is not a belief system.
The Church of Maidus with hosts Jeffrey Richard and Guy Weddle. 10 p.m. Central Saturdays. Opening the gates of the underworld and calling down beings of ancient starlight. Tune in. Watch for the apocalypse on some paranormal radio network. Come to our forum at MavisIncarnate.com.
Hi. I'm Gia Scott. I'm the host of this really cool little radio program on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some of them are authors, some of them are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.giascott.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.